Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We're going to reevaluate everything that we're doing from coaching them and make sure that we got the right guys that are in there. You know, I know we're limited in what we're playing with, but we'll look and see and try to keep getting the best combination. And we'll keep working through that with practice just to make sure we're getting the right guys out there and the guys that's going to be out there that's going to give us the best chance to win and not do some of the things that we're doing with bad football.
I can't make up my mind if I feel bad for David Culley or not. We're going to find the right guys. They're going to help us win. It's not possible. You're playing the best guys. It's not a matter of, you know, finding the right guy and looking deep into the depth chart to see who's going to help you win games. You're playing your best players. It is kind of funny. Charles Dominguez went from being a healthy scratch for a couple of weeks, and then all of a sudden he's playing the most snaps of any other defensive end on your team. That's kind of curious when you look at that. But yesterday just continues the woes of this football team. You know, defense is average at best. The offense does nothing to help them out. Texans were leading 2-0 after the second inning right there, after the first quarter. But then Arizona woke up. They would go on to win big. The Texans offense couldn't muster a touchdown. 31-5. First time that the 31-5 score, by the way, has ever been a final score in the NFL. So that's something to, I guess, be happy about. Maybe the highlight of the season for the Houston Texans. But just, man, another day.
Look, where do you want to start?
Houston Texans.
Yeah, where do you want to start? Okay, because for one, the offensive line was brutal. You saw the one in between plays where J.J. Watt just kept shaking his head laughing at Max Sharping.
And who got benched. Sharping,
and whoever was in front of him going, y'all ain't it. You are not stopping me today, and there's no way. And then the other thing, Jeremy, that kept resonating in my head because it was a discussion that we had early on when I was trying to find positives to give to this team as the season was getting ready to start. I was complimentary of the coaching staff.
Yeah.
Regardless of David Culley and his shortcomings or never have been because he had never been a head coach before, I said he constructed a really good staff. And some of the things that I turned to was the lack of penalties, the way that they seemed organized on defense and disciplined. And then I started watching the game yesterday going, oh my God, how quickly we went from that to this, because they were so undisciplined. The penalties were all over the place. And you kept looking, I just kept play by play watching it going, they're going to win. Another flag is coming. They're going to miss another assignment. They're going to screw something else up. This is embarrassing. But this is also exactly who we said they were going to be. From a roster standpoint.
Look, it's painful watching every single snap of this team, especially offensively. The offense is atrocious. They've not scored in 27 straight offensive series. The last time that they scored a touchdown on offense was early third quarter in the New England game. I mean, they're just bad. And I feel bad for Davis Mills, too, to be honest with you, because you can tell the coaching staff knows this offensive line can't protect for Davis Mills. And then if they do, they don't trust Davis Mills to make more than a couple of reads every single time he drops back. Like, he was 22 of 32. You look at that on the surface, 22 of 32 or 23 of 32. Hey, that's not bad. You can win with 23 of 32. And then you dive into the numbers. He was 23 of 32 for 135 yards. Like, I'm not sure I've seen a stat line like that from a quarterback in a long time. That's just over 4 yards per attempt. I mean, it was brutal. And then the running game was even worse. 42 yards on 15 carries, under 3 yards per carry. I mean, this offense is atrocious. And look, I mean, it is what we thought they were going to be. And we've talked about embracing the suck. The problem with embracing the suck is you have to live it through the weeks. You have to live it every day. You have to live it on Sundays. And this team is, yes, they're as bad as we thought that they were. But, boy, it is torture watching the Houston Texans right now.
It is. And the other thing that I've said this for a couple weeks now, and you and I are conversing about the offense. Can we not just stick with the one running back that was at least getting you
some
positive
yards? David Johnson had season highs. Season highs in carries, season high in yards.
That's because he was reading your Twitter all week and he knew it was his bowl.
Revenge game. Which, by the way, did you hear the CBS guy say that David Johnson, after the trade, had to seek out a health coach because of all the pressure that he had coming to Houston? Which, I mean, you can look at from a couple of different angles, right? One, how bad that trade was. The player has to seek out a health coach because he's on the receiving side of that trade. You trade away DeAndre Hopkins and get back an abysmal return with David Johnson kind of being the feature of that trade. Like, you almost feel bad for David Johnson. Like, he didn't ask for the trade to be in the receiving end of DeAndre Hopkins going to Arizona.
No, but yeah, you're right. That was a little much for me. Because at the end of the day, I mean, who are you really, right? You're a professional athlete. You're a professional football player. You get paid to play no matter what uniform you put on and what helmet you strap to your chin. You're supposed to be playing football. It's not that hard, okay? And the fact that one thing no one can take from you is the paycheck that you got, the years you got it for, and the fact that you were an NFL player that was at a pretty high level for quite a while, they can't take that away from you. But if you want to continue to make this profession, it goes with the territory. Suck it up, Buttercup. Just keep playing. I don't know that you needed help with all that. It's pretty obvious. It's just pretty simplistic when you think about it. You just go and play the next game in the next uniform that you're asked to play for, unless you want to walk away from the paycheck.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. DeAndre Hopkins let the Texans off somewhat easy. I mean, he still had a good game. 7 catches, 53 yards, and a score. There were some people thinking that perhaps that there was some shade after his touchdown celebration when he did, like, the little prayer hands.
That's the namaste.
He's been doing that for a
Arian
long time.
Arian Foster.
Yeah. Yes, I saw some people on Twitter saying, was he throwing shade at Easterby because he got everybody around in a circle and was praying?
No.
He's been doing the namaste even since he was in Houston, so that's not paying attention to DeAndre Hopkins way back to his Houston days. But Hopkins didn't seem like he had revenge on his mind.
It was just another game to me. I know some of those guys over there. This team, we got bigger goals. We knew we needed to handle business today, but we knew and know what kind of team that we have in this locker room, so I didn't want to make it a thing. It's just another game to me. Go out and play my game.
It's one of those situations in my mind. Like, sure, DeAndre Hopkins probably has, like, bad feelings to the Houston Texans. J.J. Watt probably doesn't. They gave him what he wanted. He got out of there. And Hopkins probably realizes that, too, that they got him out of there before everything started crumbling down. So he's probably pretty happy as well. Like, this is one of those, like, a lion doesn't worry about the opinion of a sheep. How could you possibly have, like, revenge game in mind against a team that's as lousy as the Houston Texans
are? Well, especially when the guy that is responsible for what happened to DeAndre Hopkins is no longer there. I think that his only issue would be with that of Bill O'Brien. If he was happy, as he said he was in Houston, if he was doing everything that, you know, in his mind was leading him to be the franchise receiver for his entire career in Houston, then, and if it did blindside him when a move was made, then he doesn't have to hold a grudge against the Houston Texans or the people that are now running the Houston Texans, because they weren't involved, except for Jack Easterby, with the move that got him out of the Houston Texans. You want to have an issue? You have an issue with Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby, because Bill even said, Jack was right next to me, we were on my back porch, and this is the deal that we made. We don't even know if Cal even saw it. By the way, happy birthday, Cal McNair.
It was, yesterday?
I thought it was today.
I saw some of the, I saw him wish him happy birthday yesterday, but it could be today, I don't know. But a lot of the comments under there.
Oh my God, that's what I was going to say. If you saw anything, there weren't a lot of birthday wishes. They were like, hey, happy birthday, sell the team. Yeah. My question is, did they go to, like, Gymboree? I mean, where's the Cal birthday party being held? At the trampoline park, if it's heavy duty? Or, I mean, there's a gaming station?
I went to the trampoline park with my son on Friday. He had a great time. It was a weird game, the Texans-Cardinals, in the sense, like I don't care that the Texans lose. I want them to, because I'm embracing the suck, and I want them to have the best possible draft pick that they can next year. That way they can really start this rebuild, because they don't even have any talent. Like, they're way behind in terms of a rebuild, because they didn't have their full arsenal of draft picks this offseason, so the best pick you had was Davis Mills. And Davis Mills, we don't even have a chance to see if he's any good or not, because he has to throw the ball in 2 seconds because the offensive line is so bad. But it's weird, though, because if you asked, like, if you took a pulse on this city, and I think we generally have a pretty good idea of what the pulse in the city is, there's more people right now that are fans of DeAndre Hopkins and J.J. Watt than the entire Houston Texans franchise. So, like, I wonder how Houston was viewing that game. And if you want to let us know, 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Like, you're kind of pulling for DeAndre Hopkins. You're pulling for J.J. Watt.
Not
and you don't even care if the Texans win.
I disagree with that. Texans fans are still pulling for the Texans in a game directly against those two guys. Now, Thursday night when they play the Packers, everybody's a Cardinals fan in Houston, because I totally agree with you. Because DW4 is no longer in the equation, and because he's turned his back and already said, even aside from all the other stuff, that he wanted out of Houston, that people have written him off and he's not what he used to be in terms of his ultimate popularity being the face of the franchise. I think that in every week other than a week when they're playing the Texans, all Texans fans are pulling for J.J. Watt, DeAndre Hopkins, and probably indirectly the Cardinals.
See, I don't know. I think yesterday. Let us know. 713-780-3776. Like, Houston Texans fans, and like, not like the homers, not the over-the-top homers that still love Kyle McNair and all of that. Like, if you're a Houston Texan fan or a football fan in the city that pulls for the Texans as your team, like, there's a lot of those people that are so embarrassed with the direction of this organization that are ashamed that this is their team in Houston. That's the feeling of a lot of fans in this city. So I'm really curious from those people If they're watching that game yesterday and they're like, man, I want Hopkins just to feast. I want him to eat. I want J.J. Watt to make Davis Mills look like the rookie that he is. I feel like that was a pretty popular way to watch that game yesterday. I want to hear from you.
I don't think so. I think that the love of the Texans, the love of football in Texas and in Houston, and the loyalty, no matter how much they admit it or not, since Bill O'Brien is gone, even though Jack used to be still there, I think the fan base was still pulling for a win yesterday.
See, my overwhelming feel of the fan base, and look, fan base, let us know, 713-780-3776, is that, look, they want the Texans to be good, but it's also an educated fan base where they know that this is an embarrassment right now. It's probably rock bottom in the franchise and the organization. You want them to lose first and foremost because you know the best interest of this team is to lose to get as good a draft pick as you can. And look, there's a lot of loyalists for DeAndre Hopkins because he was so great. A lot of loyalists for J.J. Watt because he was so great in Houston and gave back to the city.
Jeremy, but think about it. From the minute that I said embrace the suck and we started telling you as a intelligent fan, this is the philosophy you need to adopt, we got hammered for that. We took a lot of backlash for that. We had a lot of people fighting back because they were like, no, this is my Sundays. This is my team. And I still want them to win. And I'm like, okay, I'm not going to fight you on that because it's your own personal choice to like or dislike whoever the hell you want. But it doesn't make sense logically for the success long term of this franchise. So that's why I kind of combine that into what I saw yesterday going, I had a lot of people still rooting for that team. Going, how great would it be if they could get a win when everybody said, you know, the Cards are undefeated and their two most popular players, maybe ever along with Andre Johnson, are playing for the Cardinals. And so what a great upset it would be. What a fantastic weekend it would be. I had a lot of friends and people that I know in the city jacked up about that. So that's why I firmly believe it's fine if they're playing anybody else. But I think when the Texans were playing them, they wanted the Texans to win.
Let us know, Texan fans, 713-780-ESPN. How did you view that game yesterday? Were you pulling for the Texans? Were you pulling for a couple of fan favorites in Texans past? 713-780-3776. We'll get to some of your responses when we return. Also, we'll go around the NFL. Big statement victory for a team in the AFC yesterday. We get into it next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Joel, I'm Jeremy. It is a Monday edition of The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Did we have a good weekend, Houston? Did you have a good weekend, Joel?
Yeah, not bad. How about you?
I had a great weekend.
You had a late night where you had lots of action on a Saturday night. Feeling good?
In hindsight, I'm so happy the Astros won Game 6 on Friday night because I would have been one grumpy man Saturday night if I was missing the Astros Game 6, which Joel's alluding to. University of Houston game, which, look, go Cougs. They had a 5.5-hour lightning delay before they stayed undefeated in conference play, by the way, beating the East Carolina Pirates in overtime. And they host SMU Saturday with more than likely, a spot in the American Conference title game on the line. I bet you didn't think we were talking about that to lead off the show. The Houston Astros winning Game 6 Friday night, advancing to their third World Series in 5 years. Yordan Alvarez was 4-for-4 at the plate in that game as we look back on it. He went on to win the ALCS MVP. And then Luis Garcia, 5 2/3 of shutout baseball, gave up just one hit, struck out 7. And we were talking, Joel, on Friday, what is an outing that you would take from Luis Garcia? I think, and we might have to go to the tapes, I think I said I would be happy with three innings, one run.
You did.
I said I'd be thrilled with 3 innings and 1 run. He went 5 2/3 of shutout baseball. He was awesome.
He was fantastic. All of a sudden, the entire pitching staff seems to be revitalized by the fact that you now have two legit starters once again on your playoff roster, because it looks like Lance McCullers ain't walking through that door no matter how much everybody was hoping for it. You got an outstanding performance from Fromber and Fenway. You follow it up with Luis Garcia. And the good thing was that we got the story behind it, because a lot of us were thinking, hey, if you're going to say this was a medical in the reason why he got shellacked his last outing, then there's going to be a bunch of people that aren't going to have a whole lot of buy-in. But the fact that they could get it down to pinpointing it exactly what it was, show some video of it, and then realize that his MPH on his fastball went up 3 to 4 miles an hour. He topped out at 98. His location for every pitch was fantastic, and you're like, okay, stop talking about how many innings he's pitched this year. Stop talking about anything else. Just watch that damn foot location on that rubber and make sure he keeps it there, because he was phenomenal.
Yeah, he was outstanding. And you heard the quotes after the game, Alex Cora giving a lot of credit. Like, what changed in the series? Cora giving a lot of credit to Martin Maldonado and Brent Strom for changing. He talked about the patterns that the Astros were having with their pitching staff. I saw some quotes from Brent Strom as well saying, look, we just basically changed up our mentalities, what we were talking about. So I don't know if anybody was tipping. Maybe you had one or two guys that were tipping Brent Strom. I mean, if Brent Strom's going to mention it, it makes me believe that it happened, or he's either playing the psychological game.
The other thing that always bothers me, or it sends up a flag to question, is when Alex Cora pinpoints exactly when everything changed. Because it's like, there's more to this, I think, than what he's alluding to in the media. Just like in the past when he used to say, you know what, we had to bring them up to speed on some things when we got here and things like that. And it turned out to be that he was the main culprit in the cheating. When he says something like that, it was either tipping pitches and they caught it, or something else. There was more to it than just, hey, we figured out a different way to attack the hitters.
I believe 100% that something was happening. Yeah. Somebody was tipping. I'm not going to say it was the reason the Astros lost games 2 and 3, because that is gamesmanship. It is finding something out in the opponent. I also think that the Red Sox were just spitting on some tough pitches there in games 1 through 3. And I think the Astros' philosophy in those first three games weren't great either. And that's what Alex Cora mentioned in the post-series press conferences. It's what Brent Strom mentioned as well. He said basically they changed their approach. They went into the series trying to get the Red Sox out with breaking balls because they're not a good breaking ball hitting team. But they were non-competitive breaking balls in the first few games. The Red Sox were just spitting on it, and they were getting into offensive counts, and then they were taking advantage of fastball in hitters' counts. And then we saw in Game 4, first with Fromber, or really first with Christian Javier in Game 4, then in Game 5 with Fromber, Game 6 and Luis Garcia. The game plan was to get ahead with the fastball, was to challenge the Red Sox hitters. Don't nibble, like it's something that we were talked about. Yep. The word that we use, don't nibble. They didn't do that, and they changed the tide in the series. So credit to Brent Strom, credit to the pitching staff, credit to Dusty Baker.
Yeah, no question about credit to Dusty Baker. And give credit where credit is due. And Dusty, like we said, I gave him credit for pushing all the right buttons in the playoffs so far. And that's not so much making the right decision as having the guy make sure that they did their job when their number was called and they did what they had to do. I go back to what I was talking about with Cora, though. I think it might have been so much so instead of the pitchers tipping, I think they were catching something off of the way he was putting the signals down. And I think that's why he kind of indirectly gave Maldonado that much credit, because I think Maldonado probably caught it and went, okay, it's the sequencing. It's what we're doing here. And when we change that, they don't have the advantage they had there.
Yeah, I believe that if they were tipping, that there's a good chance it was Maldonado. I don't know if it was the fingers down. I think it was more like how you position on certain pitches, whether you scoot up a step to block a breaking ball, because sometimes you'll see catchers do that. Catchers can tip in that way. Here was Dusty Baker after the series talking about what changed with the pitching there in the middle of the series.
You know, the mark of a pro is that you have to forget your last start, and you have to forget yesterday. And these guys are still learning, you know, and they come out. And they came out throwing fastballs. And, you know, everybody says, okay, this team can't hit breaking balls. Or this. And then they end up forcing breaking balls early in the count. The pitch count gets high. And then next thing you know, they have to come back in with fastballs. So take your shot early. You know, you know, come in, establish your fastballs. And Maldi changed the game plan. And, you know, I know Maldi didn't have a good offensive series, but, you know, your catcher is so very, very important in the equation of pitching. And Maldi's in charge out there, and these guys, they trust him.
That was to your point, too, because there was that game which Castro came off the bench in Game 4, delivered the game-winning RBI. Everybody was staying the next day, and I even had a prisoner of the moment thought where I was saying, let's start Jason Castro. You're on the very next day saying, no. Martin Maldonado, such a great receiver. He's got such a great chemistry, especially with Fromber Valdez, because he was the one pitching the next day. That's why he has to be in the starting lineup, and it paid dividends in Game 6.
Yeah, and you see him do things that Castro would never do, and that is play big brother to the pitchers. You know, play tough love to these pitchers. Whether he's speaking to them in Spanish or English, he comes out there, and sometimes it's with Correa too, and they basically lay it on the line and tell it like it is and tell them what they need to do. And I don't think Castro's that kind of catcher. And the other thing is, and I'm not going to name all the names that I took notes of all the people that said he should be sitting, but the other thing was, you don't get that strike him out, throw him out double play, which was massive in that game without Maldonado. There's no way you can tell me on God's green earth that Castro's going to make the same throw with the same velocity in the same location. It's just not happening. And so, therefore, in a nutshell, in itself, and I saw these ratings, and Maldonado's the 40th rated player or something like that in this series. No, he's far more valuable to the Astros. And if you think that, you keep believing that until you see him do something else again this game or in this series when everybody goes, oh, that's why he's still in the lineup.
40? That seems 40. You can only carry 26. There's 52 players in this series.
Well, I think they're comparing the two teams.
Still, that's 40 out of 52. Yeah. Like, that's pretty low.
That's what I'm saying. I think that it was an insult. I think that it's all based on what the perceived lack of offense. But I don't think that enough value is put on the intangibles, because the intangibles are the way he handles the staff, talks to them, talks through smartly, intelligently in situational baseball, knows what to do and where the ball goes, and then his overall defense.
Yeah, I think the Astros are using him the way that they should, and I think they're handling the catcher position the way that they should. Maldonado is your guy. If you need some offense late in the game because you're trailing, bring in Castro. If it's against a lefty, bring in somebody else. But Dusty Baker, going into the series, everybody gave the clear, huge gap, the huge advantage to Alex Cora in terms of the managers of this two series. And I still believe that Alex Cora is a better manager than Dusty Baker overall. But if you're looking at that six-game series in hindsight, in retrospect, Dusty Baker outmanaged Alex Cora, just like he outmanaged Tony La Russa. So I'm always the guy behind this microphone that, look, I tell everybody when I feel Dusty Baker's not managing well, whenever he's doing things that I don't agree with, I'm the first one to criticize him and probably the loudest to criticize Dusty Baker. But after the six-game series where he just totally managed circles around Alex Cora, I also want to be the first one to tell you that Dusty Baker in this series was more valuable to his team than Alex Cora was.
Look, Dusty did a hell of a job. And again, this doesn't change any of the opinions that I had, and mine are not nearly as harsh as yours. But throughout the season, when I questioned sitting healthy guys that were already well-rested, when you could actually keep riding a wave of momentum instead of just resting on your laurels and saying, we won two out of three, we're going to win the series, so I'm going to start my entire bench and essentially give the team we're playing a massive advantage to try and get at least one game. Those are the kind of thing, and playing favorites with a pitching staff when they may be your favorite, but they're not getting anybody out. But what he did was he reversed course in the playoffs, and he found a way to make it work. Look, he still started Siri in a game that he had no business starting with no explanation. And the guy you sat had multiple hits the night before. But overall, I'm with you in the fact that he pushed the right buttons. You and I were talking about it. Look, I haven't said the first guy out of the pen on the Fromber game was going to be Maton. And we went back and forth on it a little bit, but I was like, that's Dusty's guy now. Like, if he comes in and does anything for a game or two, you become Dusty's guy. The same way Daly Raley, and you used to give me a hard time about it, but Daly Raley, because he knew that he had a comfort level with him that no matter what happens, I feel better going to him because I like him than anybody else in my bullpen. So for whatever the reasons, he pushed the right buttons, he got the right results, and they're sitting exactly where we needed them to sit. I don't care if it's the whole world against Houston. I think everybody's embracing it more and more by the day. It's going to be a fun series. We said the irony of all this with Dusty Baker is, you know, he could have beaten the Giants, and that would have been the team that he managed before, and that would have been ironic. He could have beaten the Dodgers because the Dodgers were the team that he played the majority of his years for. But he gets a chance to play the Braves, a team that he came up playing for because he's made mention only about 16 times with Henry Aaron.
Yes, he has.
But he's got a chance to not only get his first World Series as a manager, which is the only thing separating him from true Hall of Fame greatness managerial-wise, but also with the irony of doing it against the team he got his start with.
I have my criticisms of Dusty as the manager, but he's been near perfect in the playoffs, and he's still such a cool dude. Like, it's easy to root for Dusty Baker. Podium Dusty Baker is one of my favorite managers in all of baseball. And there was a pretty funny moment. He came back to the dugout to talk to the guys on MLB Network after the win and talked about a little bit of a situation he had after the game with Omar Lopez.
You saw that?
Yeah.
Dude, my jaw is sore right now. My coach did. Omar Lopez, he popped me in the damn chin, and I was like, you know, if I didn't know him, I'd have popped him back. You know what I'm saying? He was so happy. Man, my jaw is sore right now. Wow. I'm serious about that.
I'm just glad
you're laughing about it, but he did pop me in the damn chin.
Dusty should be good to go for game one. Cool as a cat, Dusty Baker. Happy for him, too. And look, he's a baseball lifer. Like, want him to get that first World Series title for the Houston Astros and for himself. He's had a really good managerial career. A great baseball career, too, when you go back to his playing days. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. Joel's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. When we return, there's another game to get to over the weekend from a Houston team, and they scored as many points as the Astros scored runs in Game 6 of the ALCS. We'll look at this Cardinals-Texans game when we return. It's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You going to answer that?
To call into the HR&P listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, ask the question. If you're a Texans fan yesterday, because I felt weird watching that game, you know, watching basically every game in the Texans organization's history, watching it from the expansion days in its infancy to where it's at now. Look, DeAndre Hopkins, J.J. Watt, top five players in Houston Texans history. Both of them should be in the Ring of Honor. And the only reason I'm saying they won't be is because what's the relationship like with DeAndre Hopkins at this point? J.J. Watt certainly will be. Like, Arian Foster's not in the Ring of Honor. Like, that's, I could see DeAndre Hopkins going that route. I hope it's not the case, because I hope he does get recognized as one of the all-time greats in this organization. But watching that game yesterday is weird, because you have the Texans who you want them to lose, or at least you should want them to lose, because it kind of speeds up the rebuild, you hope. At least you get a better player, you hope, if Casario can hit on the draft pick. And then you have Hopkins and Watt playing for an undefeated team in the Arizona Cardinals. He's had a very weird feel about it. So I asked the question, how did you feel watching that game yesterday? Were you pulling for Hopkins, Watt? Were you pulling for the Texans? 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to Frank. Frank, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Second time caller, everyday listener. Hey, I think you guys hit the nail right on the head, man. I mean, as a fan of the organization, you're really grateful for everything that, you know, J.J. Watt did for us. At the same time, you know, you want the Texans to kind of go out and stick it to them a little bit, but, you know, you can't really be mad at them, man. Bill O'Brien really, really screwed those guys over, screwed the organization. So it's hard to root against them. It's one of those bittersweet things, man. You want the team to win because you want them to come out on top, but those are good guys over there, and you completely understand why they left. And,
do you want the Texans to win, though, Frank?
Mad at them.
Do you want the Texans to win right now?
Man, no, right now I don't. Right. It was just in that instance. You know, it was kind of one of those, hey,
in
if we're going to win a game on – yeah, if we're going to win a game on accident, I'd like it to be this one. But other than that, you know, hey, hats off to them. Hopefully they get the ring that they were chasing, because I know we're not going to get it.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Appreciate the call, Frank. Thanks for listening to the Killer Bees. I'm pulling for the Cardinals. I want the Cardinals to win the Super Bowl. Watching them play yesterday, watching Hopkins, Watt, they haven't got a championship. I believe they deserve a championship. I like Kyler Murray, a Houston kid. I think he's one of the better quarterbacks in the entire NFL. I'm a Cardinal fan. Give me the Cardinal t-shirt. I'll be an Arizona Cardinal fan the rest of the season.
I wanted us to get H-Town or Houston versus everybody shirts.
That's for baseball.
But when you went over to the Cardinal thing, I'm out.
I'm not.
I mean, I don't know if anybody can read.
I like Hopkins. I like Watt. I like Kyler.
You know that. But here's what. But the thing is that at least, because it's an intelligent fan base, and we continue to see this when, you know, when we start talking about from fan base to fan base, city to city, with the New Yorkers and the Bostonians and the L.A. crowd that just go over the top. And not that Astros Twitter isn't completely out there, but I think as intelligent fans of the team, you got to, it's like the Kenny Rogers song. You got to know when to hold them, know when to fold them. And this is a year to fold them. Fold them so that you are sitting there with a whole lot of chips in the future that can help you get better quicker, that can help you be the team that the city desperately wants you to be. That's why the Astros are so important, because the Rockets are on a complete rebuild, and you think that they already got more pieces than the Texans in terms of hopefully the key pieces to build around. The Texans aren't that lucky, or the Texans are actually, through karma and otherwise, laying in their own puddle of you-know-what because of the fact that Bill O'Brien basically set them back 7 to 10 years. So the landscape of the sports in Houston rests on the Astros right now, and as intelligent sports fans, you go, yeah, I love it when the Texans win, and I had a good feel of it when they were winning divisions and at least getting one playoff win and at least leading up to the game itself, thinking that they got a shot against the Patriots or to get further, but they didn't do it. They were led it all the way. I mean, it was like as much of a tease as you can possibly get. They were blue. They were absolutely sky blue, and then they were royal blue in terms of the kinds of cojones you had when you were up big on the Chiefs. And then they left you right there. They teased you like no other. And that was, at the time, we didn't know that was going to be the beginning of the end. We were hoping it was the beginning of the end of Bill O'Brien. We didn't know that that was going to include DeAndre Hopkins, eventually J.J. Watt, that it was going to be a complete and utter upside-down 180 that left you, like, stunned, going, what the hell just happened to me? But it did. And now the whole city is trying to, like, survive it, come back from it. And so that's why I still think there's that kind of PTSD in their head that goes, you know what? I still want them to win.
4965 saying the only people still pulling for the Texans are brain dead sheep or they just don't pay attention. 713-780-3776. Let's go out to Gary. Gary, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees.
Hey, guys. My thoughts are a little nuanced. I mean, the Texans are a joke and they're so bad is that they had no chance to beat the Cardinals, so I didn't necessarily pull against them because I didn't have to. It was only about how much they would lose by. Mm-hmm. So overall, I do want to see Watt and Hopkins get a championship. But yesterday, it was more so like I knew they were going to lose, so no point to pull against them. And it is good seeing, you know, Hop and Watt have success in Arizona.
Appreciate the call, Gary. Another little insight from a Texans fan. That's true. I mean, the way this organization is right now, rock bottom, 1-6, you can understand they're in a rebuild. The smart fans understand it's a rebuild. It's a embrace the suck, you know, situation right now where you're kind of dull on the results. And even the general manager said that. He said, don't even look at the results. Trust the process.
Right.
Let's take another one. Sean, let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Sean, you're in the Hive of the Killer Bees.
Hello. How y'all doing this morning?
Good, man. How are you?
Awesome. Thank you. So thank you for taking my call. I love watching the Texans, especially DeAndre Hopkins and J.J. Watt. I felt so bad when everything kind of crumbled down here in Houston. And I'll tell you, I got a Texans Hopkins jersey and an Arizona Cardinals Hopkins jersey. And I was wearing my Cardinals jersey yesterday, and I wanted to beat the crap out of the Texans. And thank you very much.
Where were you wearing the Cardinal jersey at? Just around the house, or did you go out to watch the game?
I was wearing it in my house right next to my sister, who was wearing her Texans jersey. So
there you go.
We kind of have a split house, just like how you gentlemen had both described, and I understand both sides of the coin there. I really hope that we rebuild our team really quickly, and I think we need to lose out as much as we can this year. Thank you.
Appreciate the call, Sean. Look, things change fast in sports. Like yesterday in the season, it gives you feeling to believe this is going to be a long, tormenting rebuild. But things happen fast. Things change fast. Like, I mean, look, last year Deshaun Watson was leading the league in passing, and he hasn't played a game since the end of last season. They're talking about trading Deshaun Watson maybe as soon as, who knows? We heard as soon as tomorrow.
The More trade teams involved a week now, from possibly, if we're hearing correctly.
Yeah, so we'll see. 713-780-3776. Go out to Susan. Susan, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. Hey, Susan.
You guys on Friday in Beaumont.
Oh, yeah.
So, yesterday, I think it was just affirmation for J.J. Watt that, you know, he got out at the right time. And, you know, he doesn't know that many people left, you know, with the team. But a lot of Texans were pulling for the Cardinals yesterday. You know, I won't wear my Texan gear probably until this next year because it's embarrassment. And then it's a Deshaun Watson shirt, you know, at that. So, but anyway, yeah, it's just really sad, a sad turn of events. At least we have the Astros to, you know, to look forward to, you know, out of Houston, though.
Thanks for the call, Susan. Appreciate the love. And, yeah, we weren't asked to go to Beaumont, but we love the 409.
Yeah, it's funny, too. Cal McNair should be sending thank you cards to Jim Crane. Although, I don't know. Like, the fact that the Astros are good maybe puts a little more heat on the Houston Texans.
It's interesting because there was always a underlying hatred that the fans of Houston sports didn't understand or know about. Like, when I worked for the Rockets, like, Tad Brown despised the Astros. Like, he despised the Astros. He despised the Texans. And he wanted us to have that mentality. And we would all get out of meetings where we would be force-fed that and go, but why? Like, isn't it better for us? Because, like, if you have happy sports fans, it carries over. And when they go from one event, they go to the next. Or they watch this, then they go to that. They want to listen to it when they're in the car. I remember in the Western Conference Finals on the bus in Oakland going to our hotel in San Francisco and driving by the baseball stadium. And Matt Bullard and myself and some of the guys, and I was like, hey, the Strohs are in town. I should call and see if we can get some tickets. And they're like, yeah, great idea, great idea. And Tad looked at me from across the aisle, and he basically dropped three F-bombs and goes, if you go to that effing game and support that F. And I was like, time out, what?
Yeah, there's resentment from team to team. Like, once you start, like, if you in an organization, especially if you work in an organization.
Ooh, it's big.
They, you know, that's the priority, right? That's the only thing that matters. You know, being a loyalist to another team should be on the back burner, at least from their perspective. 713-780-3776. Chef Jay, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees.
What's going on, fellas?
What's up, Chef?
Chef Jay in the kitchen cooking. What do you got for us?
All right, check it out, man. You know, honestly, guys, speaking from a big-time Rockets fan, I don't think the Rockets are that far off from the Texans, man. I went to the game last night, and guys are just not well coached. As long as we have that coach still there, man, the Rockets won't be good, man. And I'm watching these guys on the sideline doing a timeout. They're playing and doing timeouts. Nobody's focused. I'm looking at the Celtics bench, and everybody's engaged doing timeouts. I see Jalen Green goofing off with John Wall, pointing to people in the stands, waving and things like that. Like, I'm not convinced that Jalen Green is even that guy. So I don't think the Rockets are that far off from the Texans, man.
Appreciate the call, Jay. Here's the thing, Jeremy, and you and I were talking even before the show. You guys know I'm a loyal diehard of diehards for basketball and for the Rockets, and I want them to do well because I put my blood, sweat, and tears in for 23 years in that franchise, and it's hard to see them as bad as they are, both in the all across the organization. I may not watch a full Rockets game this year. I don't know that I can. I tried last night because it was the perfect setup. You go from the Texans game, you had that gap before you had the Sunday night game, Sunday night game wasn't great. I thought if the Rockets game's good, I'm probably going to watch this through and through. And it was close in the first half.
I watched the first half and a little bit of the third.
It became unwatchable, and so. To Chef Jay's point, here's what I would say. Why I said they're ahead of the Texans is because you don't have your next franchise player or two on the Texans. There's nowhere near you look at that roster from top to bottom and say that one guy could be there. You look at the Rockets roster and you go, there's a couple chances for them to get at least one, if not two, of those that type player to be that type of guy. So that's why I think they're farther along. But look, whether you blame Steven Silas or whoever you want to point the finger at, no matter what talent you have on that roster right now, something's not clicking with all those players. Because as I told you, and you told me, and rightly so, look, it was just one game when I saw the opener.
It's early.
And said, yeah, it's early, be patient. What I've seen, and I didn't watch the OKC game because, of course, it was the home opener going up against the biggest Astros game of the year. But what I've seen when I've tried to watch them is a lot of isolation basketball, a lot of missed assignments on defense, a whole lot of I don't care when someone starts taking it to them, and it's only a matter of time before they fold up their tents and let someone run off 10, 15 points in a row, and it's gone. And that's hard to watch.
Yeah, it is hard to watch, and it was hard to watch that game a little bit, but they have the player, right? They have Jalen Green, who's supposed to be the star. Like, they had their first-round pick, Texans didn't. And I think Chef Jay's onto something here, too. Like, it's the same thing with my criticism of Nick Caserio. It's way too early to call. Way too early to call, but you start to see some disturbing trends and you start to pay attention a little bit. You start to wonder. It throws up red flags. So it is something to monitor with the Houston Rockets the rest of the way. All right, when we return, we'll go around the NFL statement victory in the AFC. Who it was that's next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. But first, I want to tell you to come hang out with us. This Saturday at 6, the Houston Cougars red hot, winners of 6 in a row, undefeated in conference play. They play host to the 19th-ranked undefeated SMU Mustangs this Saturday. Huge conference championship game implications for this year's I-45 rivalry. The winner will be in the driver's seat to reach the American title game. Calling all Cougs to join us Saturday to support the Cougs and enjoy the fun and pageantry of college football. It's Halloween weekend, so the theme on Saturday is Halloween. The kids come early. Come trick-or-treat tailgate style, starting in that new, sweet, expanded kid zone. Performances from the Spirit of Houston band, the best band in the land, pomp and circumstance of college football, the cheerleaders, Cougar Doll, Shasta, and Sasha, and of course, DJ Me mixing it up in the student section. Special Cougar 4-pack on Saturday. You'll love this deal. 4 tickets, 4 hot dogs, 4 sodas, and 4 chips for only $60, or tickets for just $20. You pick. You got 2 sweet deals to choose from. Get yours now at uhcougars.com/tickets or call the box office at 713-GO-COUGS. Get yours now and go Cougs.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
The Astros umpire assignments have been announced for the World Series. I always kind of find it funny that people get upset about this kind of stuff. Like, they're the umpires. Like, they're not screwing one team or the other. Unless it's Scott Foster in the NBA, then we can have that discussion. But
oh, yes, we could.
But, the umpire assignments are out. Chris Conroy, Tom Halligan's got people up in a tizzy. Dan Bellino, Ted Barrett, Mike Muchalinski. I probably butchered that, whatever. And then Alfonso Marquez. The reserve is Ron Culpa, who's not even... Like, people were bashing that Ron Culpa was on this crew. He's a reserve. Like, he's not even going to be a part of it. Like, I couldn't care less who the umpires are.
Well,
like, we can criticize the decisions they make, post decisions that they make, but even a bad umpire is going to be a bad umpire both ways.
Tommy Boy should be the one everybody should be getting on, because that was the big controversy in the last series, right?
You're talking about Halligan?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be the one that people are upset about. I've seen people upset about it. I saw the umpire assignments a little bit earlier, and I saw people like on Astros Twitter, how could Tom Halligan be on this? Like, he's the crew chief. Like,
I mean, can I just flip it and go, at least you didn't get Angel Hernandez?
Yeah, or Joe West.
Or Cowboy Joe.
Cowboy Joe.
This is the World Series. And so when you look at, like, the body of work, we all know that, it's like I said, it's never a good thing when you know a referee's name and you can point them out when you see them. And you always cringe when they're at a certain, you know, when they're doing your games in basketball or when they're behind the plate or the most influential spots umpiring. Angel Hernandez, documented over and over and over and over again, is the worst umpire in baseball in terms of the way his strike zone fluctuates and the things that you can't predict. It's the hidden variable that no one can predict. I don't think any of the guys, when you look at their percentage rates, and Patrick Creighton tweeted it all out last night, they're still in the upper 90% range where this isn't a big deal.
I misread this too, by the way. So it's a seven-man crew, and they do change who the reserve is. So I said Culpa wasn't even going to umpire in the series. I was wrong. He's a reserve in game one, but he's behind the plate in game two.
That's normally the way they do it. Yeah, the guy getting the home plate assignment in the next game
is part of
normally is in the locker room the game before.
So my bad on that. So Culpa's a reserve in game one, but he is part of the crew and will be behind the plate in game two. Culpa's the guy who told A.J. Hinch was in the spring, that threw him out of the spring training game, and then he told him, like, in a regular game, I can do whatever I want. Like, he's going to call a game fair in his mind both ways. If they screw up, we'll let you know about it. Like, it bothers me, too, like, whenever you criticize officiating sometimes. Like, yesterday in the Cardinals game, in the Texans-Cardinals game, mm-hmm. You had the sack of Kyler Murray, and then he got called for the Malik Collins got called for the personal foul because he made contact with the helmet of the official. And, like, everybody on Twitter's blasting the officials, right? Everybody's saying, oh, these officials suck. They're terrible. They're awful. Letter of the law, that's a routine call. It's why both officials threw their flag. So your angst and your criticism shouldn't be at the officials. The officials made the right call by the way the rule is written.
It's a bang play.
No, it's not. Hit him in the face. It's automatic.
Well, I get it. Well, it hit him, like, basically under the face mask with contact
to the face of a quarterback's a penalty. That's why both guys had it. So it's not the officials you should be criticizing. It's the rule. And look, right. Is the rule bad? Yeah, I think it is. Well, like, what's Malik Collins supposed to do there? But that's not on the officials. And if you're blaming the officials, you don't know the damn game.
Well, and the same thing happened in the Packer-Redskin game, if you were watching the early game here in Houston. But Tyler Heinicke is going to walk into the end zone. And so to avoid a hit, he goes down onto a knee as he slides into the end zone, and by rule, the minute his knee touches, he's giving himself up, and the ball is stopped where the knee was, and it wasn't over the goal line. Washington fans lost their mind on Twitter. They were going nuts. They were pointing fingers on the very next play. Heinicke fumbles. They don't score, and now it's the official's fault. So I hear what you're saying, but I'm just saying, bang, bang time in real time, bang, bang play, you look at it and go, oh, come on, that wasn't. But when you do slow-mo, and this is where you need to have an appreciation of what these guys do in real time. That was so quick, but thankfully for the sake of getting the call right, the official was behind the play. Mm-hmm. with the angle appropriately to see that, right?
Yeah, like you can entertain the thought. It is a bad rule. I'll give you that. Because, I mean, Malik Collins going in for the sack, and when he went in for the sack, he was like waist level of Kyler Murray, and then Kyler Murray dips at the last moment, gets hit in the head, they throw the flag there. So it is a bad rule, but anytime you see an official, two officials throw the flag on the same play, that means it's automatic. It means it was an easy and obvious call. Now, the rule is bad. All right, let's go to the around the NFL. The Bengals yesterday with a dominant victory over Baltimore, a huge statement win for Cincinnati, and the this thought that Ja'Marr Chase wasn't going to be very good in the NFL, that's not very smart. Here's what he did yesterday connecting with Joe Burrow.
Bengals have three receivers left and one out to the right. Burrow in the gun on third and two. He'll look to pass. Quick throw. Nice. Slant caught by Chase. Runs to the 30. Nice. Breaks out of the pass.
Go, Ja'Marr.
He's sprinting down the middle of the
You're
field.
Going, baby.
The Ravens 40. See pulling ya. Away at the 30. 20. 10. Touchdown.
Ooh,
how great is Ja'Marr Chase?
Ooh,
82 man. Yards to the house.
He's and I'll tell you what, the linebacker. Four. Decided to just give up Chase. I'm
Four.
Not going to chase Chase.
Good
Ask
joke
me
there.
Again. Nice, what do nice. You rate it?
That was
Four.
A Joel joke
it's
at the end, though.
It's the same guy. It's the same guy I was bitching about when I was listening Lapping. To it on satellite radio.
Yeah.
He is Clyde on steroids in terms of his woos and wows and hey, yeah. You see that, man? Yeah.
I thought you, King of Dad Jokes, though, would appreciate his, they're chasing Chase there at the end. I thought you would like that. I thought you'd get a kick out of that. WKCY ESPN with the call. Ja'Marr Chase, 754 receiving yards. In his first seven NFL games, NFL record. This is why that anytime you start believing any reports you're hearing in the preseason, that you shouldn't believe them. Just crumple them up and throw them away. Everybody, oh, Ja'Marr Chase is a bust in the preseason. He can't see the line on the football very well, so he's going to drop a bunch of passes. People were talking about how Davis Mills could spin it and how the Texans running backs had depth at the running back position. Any type of preseason training camp talk that you get, they're just trying to get you to click. They're trying to get you to listen. Don't believe any of it. None of it.
Let me just tell you something. And I was wrong. I mean, if you want to say I was wrong on this, I thought the Bengals were at least a year away, and it was because of the offensive line. That's why I said, as good as I thought Ja'Marr Chase would be, pairing him back up with Burrow, giving Burrow another weapon, because you already got Mixon, and you already got, you know, all your different, you got your skill positions are pretty well taken care of. I thought they were really going to struggle with their offensive line. The fact that they went out and got that win, they're proving me wrong. I didn't think they were going to play. The one Bengals fan went all over me saying that I was too critical and I'm hating on the Bengals. No, I was trying to be realistic and honest. I thought that they were still lacking from an offensive standpoint, and it was going to hurt Burrow because it hurt him last year physically because they couldn't protect him. Well, you give that guy any kind of time at all. Now, he was a different quarterback against the Packers. He wasn't that good. Yesterday, it looked like he took it to another level. But the Bengals, the other key is their defense played their asses off.
Yeah, their defense is what, to me, the defense was more astonishing than their offense. 41 against the Ravens defense is something. There's something to be said for that. A few of them were in garbage time when the game was out of hand. But shutting down the Ravens offense the way, I mean, not shutting it down, but slowing it down the way that they did was great. Great if you're a Bengal fan. Burrow over 400 yards, three touchdowns. There's a weird moment in that game, too. A fan tried to get into the radio booth of the Baltimore Ravens.
Tyler Boyd has it for a short gain out to the 34-yard line. Again, impressive coverage by Anthony Avery.
What are you doing? What are you doing?
You can hear the fear.
Third down and six. Burrow in the shotgun. Ravens bunch six along the defensive front. Burrow takes the snap. Blitz pressure coming. He's flushed from the pocket. Throws deep. Near side. It is broken up. Complete at the 40-yard line. T. Higgins was the target. Anthony Averett had great coverage. And that is going to force the punt team on. If you were listening, you heard Femi say, what are you doing? What are you doing?
He was not talking to the players or the coaches. We actually had a fan who was trying to climb into the broadcast booth. She said, I'm a veteran, and I'm looking for a drink.
I should have given the veteran a drink.
Yeah, I don't serve drinks at the game. I might make some cocktails at home, but this is not the right time or place.
That was quite the audio there. You had a fan trying to sneak into the window of the booth, trying to get a drink, and you could hear the fear of the color guy. What are you doing?
You ever had that happen? Anything
try to
like
climb,
that? Or just try
I mean, I've had people talk to me through the booth, but never try to climb into the booth.
Yeah, the biggest problem we had is when they moved the broadcasters upstairs at Rockets games, and it's right on the aisle.
Yeah.
And you get people that are overserved in the fourth quarter that can't get that last drink. And then they just feel like, hey, I'm going to sit down and talk to the broadcasters. And they just reach over the rail and just start, blah, blah, blah. You're like,
yeah, I've had people try to talk to me while I'm on the air. That's always annoying. It's like, I'm doing a job here, guys. I love you, but I'm doing a job here. Lorenzo and Art on hold. We'll get to you guys when we come back. We got to get to this break. Also, Deshaun Watson trade talks are heating up. That's next. The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
This is Ed Tuttle Jones, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.